business, industry, and jobs. Take your order. I think we're one or two people short of a quorum, but we've got three or four important bills to look at this morning. And the first one on the agenda will be Senate File 542, Senator Thomas Soney. What's an acronym? MIMF? MHMFIP. Senator Thomas Soney.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you.
I see. Minnesota Family Investment Program. Okay.
Thank you for hearing this bill for us. Mr. Chairman, this bill is a result of much of what's been going on in the national and state economy. And a response in large part to where a real lot of the bailout money has been going. And most of the bailout money has been going to banks and insurance companies and very large companies. This bill is an attempt to make sure that people who are not parts of the big banks or parts of the big insurance companies or parts of the large companies, but are just people on the streets who have lost their jobs, don't have a job, or trying to find a job, can be taken care of in such a way that they can be around for when the economy comes back and they can live a decent life at this time. Some of the parts of the bill are extensions of the cap on 5 years on the welfare assistance. There's unemployment insurance extensions in the bill. There is a moratorium foreclosure on a moratorium on bank foreclosures on homes and on rental properties. There's also a jobs creation program, and there's also a request to our colleges and universities to try and not lay people off. And Mr. Chairman, many of these parts of this bill are moving in other committees or in by themselves, and some of them have maybe already been passed. But the people that are here today have a very powerful story to tell, and I would kind of like to turn this over to my witnesses now, Mr. Chairman. And
you're welcome, folks, to the committee, and
I'm give you their side of the story.
There's a lot of hurt out there, and we all know that. Go ahead.
Thank you, Senators, and thank you for the opportunity to testify, and thank you to Senator Tomasoni for bringing this bill forward. My name is Deb Konichny, and I am a member of the Minnesota Coalition for a People's Bailout, which is a coalition of labor organizations, housing, tenants organizations, low-income people, and community organizations. We came together in response to the economic situation. Right now, we are facing an economic crisis not seen since the Depression. Low-income and working people in Minnesota are being hit hardest by this crisis, and each day we're facing more desperate situations. Outside these Capitol walls, things are not looking good. Minnesota is experiencing record unemployment. We're seeing our jobs disappear. Tens of thousands of us are losing employment, facing layoffs, and running out of unemployment benefits or not qualifying for benefits. Thousands of us are losing homes to foreclosures or being evicted from our rental properties that are being foreclosed upon. Many of us who thought we'd never have to go back on public assistance are losing our jobs and are now bumping into the 5-year lifetime limit on public assistance. More and more of us are being forced to go to food shelves just to be able to keep food on the table. What we need now is a bailout for the people in this state. Low-income and working people did not create this economic crisis we're in, and we should not be the ones to pay for it. We've seen millionaires and billionaires and financial institutions get massive bailouts while our families are living in extreme stress and are suffering. The People's Bailout Bill before you addresses many of these issues we in this state are facing right now. It takes crucial steps to protect low-income and working Minnesotans from the growing crisis. It's a serious bill, and it is necessary to respond to the serious times we're in. The bill addresses three main areas, as Senator Tomasoni laid out. It extends, the first part is jobs and income now. It extends unemployment benefits and makes more people eligible for these. It creates a public works program that provides grants to cities or towns to put people to work now. And it provides a two-year extension to the five-year limit on public assistance, which really is the only unemployment benefit program for poor families who often are the last hired, the first fired, and won't qualify for unemployment benefits. The second big part is housing. This bill puts a moratorium on foreclosures for homeowners, and it allows tenants to keep their leases if their landlords go into foreclosure, thus preventing tenants from becoming homeless. Since January, in Hennepin County alone, there have been 1,000 foreclosures since January. You may remember, well, none of you were here probably, but in the 1930s, this legislature did put a moratorium on foreclosures of housing, houses, and farms. And that moratorium was challenged and went all the way to the state Supreme Court, was upheld, and went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, where the moratorium was upheld as a righteous and necessary act to keep people in their homes and farms. Finally, I just want to say that we know that there's a lot of focus right now at the legislature on the state deficit. And unfortunately, much of the talk is about cutting even more services and programs from the same people who are being hit hardest by this crisis. This is a time to be helping the people in this state instead of cutting what we need. This bailout bill will not maybe benefit someone of great wealth. It certainly will not benefit those who stand to make gains off the tragedies of others. But this bailout bill will help the majority of Minnesotans, which are the constituents, our neighbors, our communities, our family members, the majority of people who are in crisis right now, and we urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Does anybody have a price tag on the five-year to seven-year extension of welfare benefits?
We don't have an exact price tag on it yet. That's actually moving through Health and Human Services right now.
I have no idea.
But it would come out of TANF dollars, and there are TANF dollars available, federal funds that are available for that. So it wouldn't come out of the general fund.
Okay, I got to take your word for it. I know that about the TANF funds, but I don't know if the state has to share in this or not. Okay, we'll go on with the next witness.
I'm Phyllis Walker, president of Ask Meat Local 3800, the clerical workers at the University of Minnesota. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we all know that working class people in Minnesota are currently in the grip of a huge economic crisis. It's an economic crisis that threatens our jobs, it threatens our homes, and it threatens everything we have struggled to build for ourselves and our families. The way the economic crisis has been dealt with so far has not worked. The money that was funneled to the banking industry has not and will not trickle down to working class people. As the unemployment rate continues to climb and the economy worsens, it becomes more and more evident that working class people need a bailout of their own. More and more people tell me about how desperate their lives have become. Last week, a clerical worker at the U told me about his situation. He was laid off from his second job and doesn't know how he's going to pay the mortgage and take care of his family on the meager wages he earns from his first job as a clerical worker at the University of Minnesota. Needless to say, he's terrified when he hears talk of possible layoffs at the U. A person I spoke with a few weeks ago told me the trucking company where her husband had worked for so many years had downsized and he lost his job. They want to sell their home instead of losing it to foreclosure, but there are so few people in the market to buy homes that it's doubtful that they'll find a buyer. The moratorium on foreclosures would no doubt help this couple. I told a friend of mine who's about to run out of unemployment benefits about the People's Bailout Bill. When I told her the bill would be heard in committee today, she told me she's guardedly optimistic about her chances to stay afloat as she continues to look for another job. She told me to tell you that an extension of her unemployment benefits might just be the bridge that she needs that would keep her from losing her home and her small savings. Our bill will not only help the people I just mentioned, it will help all Minnesotans, because when we help the people most in need, it impacts workers at all levels. Working class people ultimately need living wage jobs, jobs that only government can create. And until those jobs are created, working class people need the safety net that the People's Bailout Bill provides. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are many, many labor organizations that have endorsed the People's Bailout Bill, and I will name a few of them for you. ASME Local 3800, the clerical workers at the U. ASME Council 5, that represents 40,000 working people in the state of Minnesota. The St. Paul Regional Labor Federation, that represents 45,000 working people in the state of Minnesota. The United Food and Commercial Workers, and Unite Here Minnesota, that represents 6,000 people in the state. Thank you.
Let me assure you that there's not a member of this committee that is for layoffs, so just we'll start with that. And, so we'll go forward with the next step.
Hi, good morning. My name is Rosemary Williams, and if you don't know anybody that's been in foreclosure or met anybody, you have today. I am supposed to be out of my property that I've been in for 55 years on 31st and Clinton on Monday. I went through unemployment, and it's kind of funny how God works. I was unemployed for about a year and a half, and now my friends don't have jobs, but I have a job. And I went to the bank to try to negotiate, and I went to my bank, TCF, and they told me they're sending their money back because their portfolio was good. My question was, is how can you send money, bailout money back, when there are so many people in the state of Minnesota that need that money to stay out of foreclosure? I'm just hoping that we're able to turn this piece around, get the moratorium through, because this is a serious situation. Like I said, after 55 years of living on 31st and Clinton, I am now going to be evicted from my home on Monday.
Okay. And this bill would extend the moratorium for another year, is that correct? From 1 year to two? I think so. All right. Do anybody else?
Oh, I forgot to mention, too, that 75% of all foreclosures in Hennepin County are in North Minneapolis, which is devastating. You should drive down the street, get out of your car. You will count 11 and 12 and 13 houses in a block that are empty, and the people are gone. It's not just one person out of those homes. It's a whole family. Where those people are going, shelters are full. People are living in the streets. People are having to leave the states. This is a serious situation, and I hope all of you politicians will do what we need to do to turn this problem around in our state.
Yeah. I just don't want to see the houses that are empty for a year be empty and for 2 years either. So we got to think of it that way. And what happens now is building inspectors and others will say they go in and take the copper, and they're mad at the world, so they take the toilets and the bathtubs. So, you know, some of us here would like to see it 5 years, but it doesn't work quite like you think, because that bad piece of property on the block will sit there not for 1 year, but for two. So it's not just quite as easy as, you know.
I understand. I have four on my block alone in South Minneapolis.
But anyway,
I'll be the fifth.
adding another year, we got to think about that too. Okay.
I would just like to add, the best way to solve that issue of those properties is to keep families in their homes and not be letting the foreclosures in this bad time. This is just a temporary moratorium that will keep families in the homes to get us through this economic crisis. First, there were the predatory loans and all of the balloon payments, and now people are losing homes because they have no employment, directly connected to the unemployment. So this is really a critical issue.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I think that part of the bill also is in relation to rental properties. And one of the interesting things we heard about foreclosures on rental properties is that the landlord was being foreclosed upon, even though the people who were living in the rental property were paying their rent. And so as a result of the foreclosure on the landlord, the people who were paying their rent on their rental properties were being evicted also. And so we had, you know, a double whammy where there was a foreclosure on the property and people who thought they had a place to live suddenly didn't have a place to live, even though that they were paying for the home. So that's another part of what's in this bill. I don't know if there's more witnesses or not, and I don't know if there's anybody that's against this bill, Mr. Chairman, but I guess open for questions or comments or opponents or whatever you want to do here.
You mentioned a big part of the this bill is in other bills. Is it necessary to do the whole bill at this time, or how do you feel? I mean, it's because I've seen versions of 85% of this bill other places, and I don't know. And Senator Scheid isn't here, but she's got a legislation, too, that deals in another manner on the foreclosure stuff that might be palatable, too, and she's not here to talk about it, but there are other ways to get at this, too. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, I think you're correct in that probably the only part of the two sections of the bill that aren't somewhere else are Sections 9 and Sections 10.
And they're pretty important. You know, Section 10... Okay, prohibits the legislature from doing any layoffs. Huh.
Well, okay. It doesn't prohibit. It's
mandate.
It says we shouldn't, shall not mandate state layoffs, but I don't think we do that anyway, do we?
Well, I certainly don't want to see anybody laid off that are public servants, but that'll, okay.
Mr. Chairman, is there any more testimony on the bill?
I have none from the
yeah, and I think people
side.
Are a little.
I don't know if there's opponents, Mr. Chairman.
I think there are, but they're not coming forward. I don't know. Mr. Nelson, on this, Mr. Nelson, didn't we do? You were talking about just 9 and 10 a minute ago. Okay, because we did that UI stuff. The first bill that passed the Senate, did that take care of a lot of that? Discussion on section, whatever section it is, the bill I carried that extended the UI, the first bill passed out of the Senate.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. Mr. Chairman, to your question, Section 2 and Section 8. Are already been enacted into law.
That's the bill that I carried, is that correct?
Yes.
So Section 2 has been handled already, and the governor signed it, by the way.
Yes.
We had to do that by a particular Sunday, didn't we, to get it done and get those 2,600, well, whatever, we know that story. Okay. So that's Section 2 has already been talked or done.
Mr. Chairman.
Signed into law.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, simply like to speak to Section 4 and the serious concerns that Section 4 brings. First of all, it's somewhat unclear what the purpose here is, because it doesn't say that you accept a valid taxpayer identification number in lieu of anything.
We should get some nice tea.
But
something.
I assume, and in talking to some of the
Brian
advocating that you would accepted in lieu of a Social Security number. There are a number of problems with that, including that it would violate federal law. The Social Security Act, in fact, requires us to obtain a Social Security number when an individual applies for unemployment benefits.
Yeah.
And the reason Social Security law does that, for a variety of reasons, is one, collection of child support, and a number of other things. Plus, also, all of our records are kept by Social Security number.
So this isn't workable?
This is
yet
not workable. And not only, it's not even clear what it says or what it's supposed to do, but I believe it was intended to say in lieu of a Social Security number. And again, that would be in violation of federal law.
Well, we can't do that if it's in a violation of the Section 4. Okay, any other concerns? We've handled Section 2 by law. Section 4, in your judgment, and you do this every day, is not workable. Any other concerns of yours, Mr. Nelson?
No, Mr. Chairman. In fact, most of the other provisions dealing with unemployment insurance are in a couple of other bills, actually, and the department fully endorses them.
And some of the foreclosure stuff, like I mentioned earlier, is being worked on in other bills, and that's not your area, Mr. Nelson. But I do know that there's foreclosure legislation in this building going on. So,
well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, there, it seems like the majority of this bill is moving forward in other places. And as Mr. Nelson said, there's a couple issues here that I think that we're going to have to take a long, hard look at before we pass it on. So I really feel that, you know, and I don't think the bill should leave the committee unless it's ready to be a law. And I just don't feel that it's ready to be a law yet. So I would move that we would lay this bill on the table.
Okay. On that,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Senator Murphy. Let me suggest we delete sections 1 through 8 instead. Did you hear that?
No. I didn't hear you. What did you?
Okay,
that
I'm sorry.
Happy with that, or?
Yeah. Well, I
sounds like there's a lot of work to be done here.
I realize that laying it on the table is not a debatable motion, but I was going to. I was.
We let you go a little bit.
I was wondering if Senator Murphy would entertain laying it or deleting sections 1 through 8 instead. Since those are the ones that are mostly in other bills, and Section 9 and 10 are...
But, you know, one of the concerns I have, be very candid, I think 1 through 8 does pass the other body, and then if we pass 9 and 10, mm-hmm. then what gets married later on? That's what the concern I have of mine. And but
well,
then you'd get the best of all worlds, but like I said, yeah.
Section 1 is in Health and Human Services. The unemployment, all the unemployment stuff is moving in other bills. That's 4 of the sections, and then the other sections are the foreclosure sections. And I understand that those are controversial and need a lot of discussion.
Okay, I think. We've got a motion on the table, and saying I think
Mr.
we ought to
Chairman
vote.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Tomasoni, I, you know, I wouldn't mind letting your, you know, I wouldn't mind deleting sections 1 through 8, but, you know, I still have heartburn with sections 9 and 10. So I would still make the motion to put it on the table after we were done. As a matter of fact, section 10 probably gives me more heartburn than any other section in the bill.
How about sections 1 through 8 and section 10, Senator Murphy?
and 9.
9's actually, 9's actually
Mr. Chairman,
pretty good
I
section.
I suppose we could just send the Senate file out. No language.
No.
No. Mr. Chairman, I'd renew my motion.
Okay, on the motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you. We're we're here to help you, by the way, and you didn't. We're still working on, well, like I said, the first 8 sections are probably going to, some will pass anyway. So, Senator Olson, I welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Thank you for agreeing to hear my bill. I know it has a high number in terms of being a recent introduction, but the language in this bill and some of the ideas in this bill are things that I have worked with kind of over time since I learned about in talking to local governments and coming up with or talking about what the state might do to assist them with economic development that has merit in their specific area and may not fit either within a job zone or may not fit because of location or for another reason, or may not otherwise have an ability to get the project off the ground. One of the things that we heard about when we were right at the beginning of the session and we were at the Humphrey Institute and talking specifically about our budget problems and economic development was that venture capital in Minnesota was really woefully short, and that we really needed to do something to try to stimulate entrepreneurial types of projects. And from my perspective, to allow small businesses and individual people in Minnesota who are already here, who have those good ideas, or neighborhoods or towns that have these good ideas for either a new project that would be specific, make specific use of something in their area. Like in my area, it's making wood pellets out of the leftover product of the forestry industry now that there's a market for those products and some new technology available. And I'm sure in every area we have things that are specific to that particular area where people have creative and innovative ideas, but perhaps especially in today's difficult times in accessing credit, having difficulty just getting the capital to get that project off the ground. But also in going from one small community to another in my district, I realize that it's hard to put together a one-size-fits-all plan for economic development that would work everywhere around the state, because every community might have a little bit different need, and so what works well in one area might not be the best thing for another area. So I tried to put together a proposal that would allow for a lot of flexibility as well as accountability for the use of this capital. So what this venture capital proposal would do is, and just to kind of explain the framework of how this would work, we would have at the state level a revolving loan fund that would be administered under deed, and competitive grants would be made by local units of government working in conjunction with a potential business venture that would put together a complete proposal for deed to consider for the grant. The criteria that the proposal would be evaluated under are listed on page 2. And they're specific criteria based on needs that I saw in my district, but I think that they're broad enough that they could fit the criteria of or fit the needs in many different areas. Specifically, if we have a building or an area of a community that needs redevelopment. I was thinking specifically, for example, in Pequot Lakes, there's a building that's sitting empty with 35 small retail outlets, and it's been was a thriving building 20 years ago for retail development, but over time the building needs some rehabilitation, and so it's now sitting empty, waiting for some kind of a project to be developed and an idea to be brought forward for redevelopment of that building. The second criteria uses federal stimulus money resulting from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Again, the idea is to maximize resources. And I should say that the way this is envisioned, no project would have to meet all of these criteria, but these are just a menu of options to be considered. Some projects might only relate to one of these criteria, but there's a lot of flexibility in how those would be evaluated. The third criteria is assisting with meeting our renewable energy standards. The fourth, reducing greenhouse gas dependency on fossil fuels. The fifth, assisting resident entrepreneurs. Again, this envisions assisting people who are already Minnesota residents and living in our state to initiate or expand in a manner that creates sustainable jobs and are compatible with resources available in an area. Sixth would be supporting research and development of innovative non-traditional uses of resources. I think I've already given one example of that. 7, integrate support services and businesses in a central location. For example, the global marketplace in the metro area is a good example of how that's worked successfully. 8, reaches out to certain populations that are underrepresented in the workforce. So again, I'm giving a menu of criteria. There probably are many other good criteria that could be added to this list, but I'm looking for targeting projects, but giving a lot of flexibility to the communities that would be bringing these proposals forward. And then finally, subdivision 6 of the bill makes it clear that we are not limiting this to a particular geographic area, but we're trying to target the funds where they are most needed at any particular time in the state by requiring that we also evaluate the rate of unemployment in a particular area where the application would be coming from, and also the average household income in that area, so we can really try to target those funds where they're most needed. The idea would be that the funds, once that this would be a lower, no-interest loan at the discretion of the local unit of government, so it's not a giveaway. It's a loan program, but the loan money would come back to the state. If the local unit of government then wanted to apply for another project in their area, they would be prioritized based on how successful they've been in implementing the prior project. So if the money's come back and the business was successful, then they would have a higher level of priority for a reapplication. I think council pointed out to me that it may not be crystal clear that the idea was that the repayment of the loan funds would be come back to the state. It's stated kind of indirectly that way in subdivision 7, but if there is language that needs to be added to make that clear, that might be.
Senator Olson, the council has talked to me about this, but I think it's a very creative, positive approach here that you're going after, and we've done a series of some bills in the last month in this committee that will enhance, I think, the program that you're trying to achieve here and to create jobs and build some businesses out there. So I applaud you for bringing this forward. And if it's all right with the committee, I know there's some language stuff and the council said he might need a little more. But I'm comfortable moving this out today with the understanding with the committee members that the loan language and that's a little off, and we'll take care of that, okay? Committee members, is that fair? Because I think we've got a good then you've got to go another step and get some dough, right? So I think it's fine. Senator Skoy?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to move Senator Olson's bill for when the time is appropriate.
Okay. On the motion, any discussion at all? Anybody opposed? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Senator Clark is here. Senator Clark. Welcome to this pristine committee.
Oh, Friday morning.
Friday morning. We should be in Stearns County probably or somewhere.
You could. Or if we could get a new county, you could be in a new county.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair and Senator Clark, I think the last time we saw each other was last night, and we had a battle going because our towns played each other in the basketball game. So I just wanted to express my condolences for your loss.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
I have to say, Mr. Chair, members.
Welcome to our committee.
Well, actually, it was harder last night because our education committee, in the middle of our early childhood bill, we had to lay it over to go to session. And unfortunately, we reconvened when I was going to miss watching Tech basketball in the second game of the state, which is a really big deal for our area. And the really great boys basketball, and I will say boys, young men's basketball team got defeated by the men's basketball team of Hopkins. So my husband watched him the other day, and he said, you know, there's not one boy on that team. They all could be playing
at
college.
Edison?
Which is good. Maybe we could get them to go to one of our universities.
Hopkins. Oh, yeah. Hopkins. Hopkins. Oh, yes. They're pretty good.
They're
recruiting,
amazing.
Too.
Yeah. But unfortunately, I will. Hey, wait. This is important.
I think they get them from
the first half of the
Texas, Louisiana.
The first half of the game was 12-13, so Tech had kind of figured them out for at least part of the game until Hopkins remembered that they really were a fabulous team. So anyways, now the Tech Tigers came quite forward. Mr. Chair, we have they're passing out an amendment, you might want to do that, and then I can explain where we're at for today.
Okay, I think there's an oral amendment. Would you amend? Okay, well, just tell us what it is.
Mr. Chairman, on page 1, line 6, after the development comma, insert the Governor's Workforce Development Council comma.
Okay, Senator Murphy moves that amendment. He moves the amendment as amended. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those most prevail. Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair,
are we working then just off the amendment?
Yes. It's a
delete all. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. Senator Clark.
Actually, I'm pretty excited about coming in. I want to thank you for squeezing this in. I know that you've had a really busy schedule. The provision that's in front of you looks different than what the bill was. What kind of the journey that we're on this session is trying to think about ways that we can reduce red tape, duplication, think about how we can keep enhancing and improving services. And one of the areas that we have a lot of pride in is the ways that we are doing adult training, doing adult education, and a lot of places around the state have been working on these things. But there are some challenges. And so the original bill, if you want to look at it, would actually merge the workforce centers in with MNSCU, thinking particularly about the technical and two-year colleges, and would have moved adult basic education. And the idea was to get a conversation starting. There's some really good things happening around the state right now, but we can move a lot forward. So, and we've got, I've been working with all of the different stakeholders, and we've got some people who can talk about this today. But what I want to tell you is, in some ways, how this came about is in St. Cloud, the technical college now has the workforce center co-located in the same campus. And what they found when they came together is that there's a number of topics where they have not necessarily duplication, but they've got some similar goals that they are doing similar things. Things like customized training, things like short-term training, working with the business community, among others. But there's some real challenges with those who are walking into these places. And I don't know how much detail, Mr. Chair, you actually want me to go into on this, but what I want to tell you is this originally came out because of looking at sometimes the bouncing around of what the workforce folks are supposed to be doing, both on a federal, sometimes a state or in an agency level, the wide array of people they serve, whether it's low-income people who maybe are not working right now but need to get working, new Americans that are needing to get jobs. It could be people who are dislocated, people who have disabilities. There's, a wide array. So if we think of a continuum of adult learning, we have everything from people needing basic skills to needing retraining and reentry. And then and they may have to deal with 3 or 4 or 5 systems. And then if you think about on the other end, our businesses, our other consumers, and sometimes in the local level, there's not, as you saw in the legislative auditor's report, not always the best forecasting about where are the gaps in the training needs, what needs to be done. So the thought was, why don't we think about how we could actually be better blending and think about the continuum of services? The good news is there's some really good things happening around the state right now. And what the delete all does, what the A3 does, is build on, help us kind of in an assertive, maybe not aggressive, an assertive way, think and get to a point that we are blending services in a better way. So what it does is it brings together a number of entities that have some connection, some nexus with adult employment and training, and building off of in subdivision 2 on lines 1.12 to 1.23, looking at these types of goals, how do we do a better job? So identifying around the state at least 4 areas that are already doing some pretty good things. There's the ETC grants, the Joyce Foundation's involved, among others, about how, again, how can we better align things, and without a predetermined conclusion about what that means from a state standpoint. So by this summer, at least four local projects would be identified. My area, frankly, is a prime suspect. Anoka is a prime suspect. There's a lot of great rural places need to do something in the metro area that over the next few months would be really identifying how they would move forward. And then by then they would develop this collaboration plan that you can see on 1.13, including, again, a variety of people who are already on the WEA boards that are good local partners. And then they would be giving us a report by 2010 with recommendations regarding agencies and system programs and services that should be integrated into a project. They would implement those things and then, frankly, come back to us and say, this is what we found out. This is what we think would make a big difference around the state. Here's some ways we could either realign. You'll notice that on 2.21, looking at recommendations concerning financial system design, statutory changes, there is no predetermination. But we want to think about what we could do better. So in these time of tight resources, getting our folks to be thinking even more and moving into a direction about how we deal with this continuum, how we best leverage public and private resources could be a real good thing. So that, Mr. Chair and members, is what the bill would do. And I do have a few people who are willing to testify. If you have any questions before we bring them up.
Are they all positive?
Yes.
I understand. Okay, I want to just take a minute to thank you for working on this, like the Senator Clark. My first impression was a little bit too much too soon, and what you're doing now really gives me a lot more comfort level where you can work with these entities in a collaborative fashion and come up with something really pretty good. I mean, people are expecting government to do obviously more with less, and you could come up in a year or so with a good plan, and I applaud you for working, I heard, into the night to kind of get some language like this, and I don't think it hurts a bit where everybody gets together and come back to us with the well-planned out way to do things and our services in a better way. So
thank you, Mr. Chair.
So
yes.
I think this is a good approach.
Merging entities
and maybe
the summer would have been a little too soon no matter what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing is it can help us. We're doing some nation-leading things already. And I think it really puts us even in a more highlighted way. And between our incredible business communities, the ways that we're trying to identify how do we really create good jobs, how do we make sure that we're competitive worldwide, how do we make sure we've got people trained? You know, with our changing demographics, several of us serve on higher ed as well. Between what you all are doing, Mr. Chair, and members in this committee, what Senator Tomasoni's committee does, but also both E12 and higher ed, we're all trying to figure out how do we have the best workforce with changing demographics, changing economy, technology, and all of that. So I think this has the possibility of really moving us in a quick way, but in a responsible way.
I agree with that. Senator Bonnef.
Mr. Chair, Senator Clark, I think this is a great initiative, and you and I talked about it, but I hadn't seen this latest thing, and I think it's a perfect complement to the shared service initiatives that are going on, and so I'd love to work with you to make this happen.
Great.
None of this is a criticism. I mean, things we could do things a little better.
We do have a lot to be proud of, and
we can do
better.
We certainly do, I believe.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Chairman and Senator Clark, you and I have had a discussion about your bill before. And, the adult basic education component here mm-hmm. is part of the study, it looks like, or the report.
They're fine.
Is everybody on board with this?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Tomasoni, Literacy Minnesota, we've been working together. I'm looking for them. I don't know where they are. We've all been working together. You know, one of the things we want to make sure we all have really good – each of these entities has really good pieces that they're doing, and they're all trying to figure out how to be working and strengthening anyways. So this ought to give us some good ways to build on. I don't know if somebody wants to speak to that, but we've been working together on this, and they're nodding their heads. So.
For the record, they're nodding their heads. Yes, we get. We've got.
They're nodding their
heads. I don't
know,
does anybody?
Yes, they would like to speak, or yes, they agree with
anybody,
that.
Yes, we're going to open it up. If, you know, I think things are going pretty good, but if you want to come up.
My guess is unless you really want somebody. I guess now that you're requesting it, actually, I will ask.
Oh, sure, Brad. Welcome, folks, to the committee in the Minnesota Senate.
Thanks. I'm Bonnie Elsie, and I'm the director of the Workforce Development Division, indeed. And I really want to commend this amendment. I'm very happy to see this. I just want to say that I'm on the record on paper as opposing, and I don't want to be opposing. I'm all about collaboration.
You probably weren't all alone yesterday, but Senator Clark has really, really worked on this, and we give her a lot of credit for it.
Well, and I
went a little slower on this whole thing.
Well, I had two major concerns about the original bill, and I just want that heard for the record. And number one was breaking us away from unemployment insurance. And because unemployment insurance is such a critical feed into the employment and training system as far as identifying a dislocated workers, the Trade Adjustment Act. It is also funded by the same resources as our job service, and so we really need to be connected to them. So that was my one concern. And then the other concern was, which could always be overcome, but the other concern was the fact that in the federal legislation, all the WEA programs have to report to the governor. There are two states where WEA programs are, employment trainings are in with the community college system, the state of Oregon and the state of Virginia, but the governor has to appoint the head in because of the workforce agency within the institution because they can't report to the Board of Trustees. I just want to talk a little bit really quickly about some of the great work we are doing in Minnesota. Because we're very proud of it, and I think Ann Olson will be talking about some of the same things. I don't know everything she's going to talk about. But alignment is something that we have been pushing for the last couple of years, and we have done it in a number of ways. We have received some federal grants. We've been very proactive at that. We have a WIRED grant that aligns workforce, education, and economic development in the southwestern part of the state all the way up to Fargo-Moorhead. We have two regional planning grants from the federal government that are all about aligning workforce and education and economic development. And then as a state, we put out what we call FIRST grants, and that's Framework for Integrated Regional Strategies. And the requirements of those grants were that as partnerships, the workforce center system had to be a part of it, adult basic ed had to be a part, higher education, and economic development. And we did not define the regions. We wanted the locals to define the areas, and they needed to be labor market areas. So we are very proud of the work we have done in that area. The other thing that we have done is adult basic ed in our department have been putting out grants so that we can get adult education integrated in a remedial education integrated into the work that we're doing with skill development within the workforce centers. And we are going to be putting out more of those grants this year. So we are very happy to see the encouragement here because we plan to do this anyway, but we can do better, and we'll be very happy to see what kinds of better models that we can come up with. So that's the only thing that I wanted to say.
Thank you. And you. Mr. Chair, Commissioner McElroy did work on this language with us last night, too, after he came back from a Minsky meeting. So we appreciate his flexibility. And I know everybody else should speak very briefly because I know you've got other things that you need to be doing. Yeah. But if it's okay, if we could have.
Like basketball and hockey.
You know, I have to say I was very glad that Senator Vandiver's bill about not letting St. Cloud State be competitive with the Gophers didn't go very far, so that was a good thing.
Actually, I think I might have sponsored that same bill in the past. I'm not sure. Anyway, who wants to go next?
You're okay with Canadians playing in Minnesota.
I think that was the issue. Who wants to go next?
Sure. Tom Citrin Heisem with Literacy Minnesota.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak. As many of you know, we did have some serious concerns with an earlier version of the bill, which would have moved adult basic education into MinSCU, and we very much appreciate working with the author, and that's now been replaced with the Liddell Amendment. And just want to reiterate the same things that Ms. Elze did, that we are working very hard with other state agencies, with MNSCU, with workforce centers, to align our services in the most effective way possible and hope that this bill will provide a way to further the work we've already started. Just two quick things I would like to mention. In order to better align ABE with the workforce preparation, we're working with the author to mandate ABE participation on local workforce investment boards and the GWDC. And also just like to close with a note that we're seeing really record amounts of utilization of ABE services throughout the state as a result of the recession and people coming in to try to improve their skills. So we really hope that we will be able to continue working with the author to find some resources that will allow us to thoroughly and effectively implement the things in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, members, you should know that there is not an appropriation in here because there are a variety of, with respect, particularly with the The federal recovery funds, Joyce funds. There's a number of things that we think, at least here, eventually in a couple of years when they come back with what the state will need to do, there will be some. But we have worked out some. We think there's some opportunities, including looking at the Northwest Area Foundation is very interested in this kind of thing. So at least from the local, this immediate part. Now, in terms of the long run, we know that adult basic education is needing resources all the time. And so, frankly, as we're moving forward, we all have to think about what those resources would look like.
Okay. Say your name for the record, please.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ann Olson. I'm the director of the Minnesota Workforce Council Association, and we work with all the local providers of the employment and training programs in the workforce centers, along with partners from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. We just wanted to say, too, we've been working very closely with the author, and we appreciate her willingness to incorporate some of the suggestions we had made as well. I think that the interaction between the entities outlined in this proposal varies across the state. Many of the programs listed in the mandatory partners or listed in the bill are actually mandatory partners in the workforce centers. In some communities, the workforce center is located on a MNSCU campus, and in other areas, they're co-located with adult basic education, but it doesn't look the same everywhere. We think that's a good thing because they're addressing the needs of their local communities, but this will give us the opportunity to kind of put forward some best practices of how people are working together. And from our perspective at the local level, too, I just wanted to acknowledge that we have seen a lot of movement from the departments at the state level to work together and try to address the needs of job seekers or other folks who are looking for employment and training services across the whole spectrum of the services that all of us provide. So we appreciate Senator Clark's attention to the programs that we're providing. And one other thing I wanted to mention, we're very pleased that the local workforce councils will be heading up the efforts at the local level. We have business, labor, education, nonprofit members on our boards, and we think that that'll be a great opportunity for us to work more closely with our partners to kind of drive the employment and training services in a way that meets the needs of the communities that we're working in. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. Any questions of the witness?
One more person, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Cunningham.
It's Mike Murphy from MNSCU, and the reason why I asked him to come up is that they've been doing some really good work together through the Joyce Foundation, and I think briefly it's good for this committee to know.
Welcome, Mr. Murphy. Say your name for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Michael Murphy. I'm the Associate Vice Chancellor at Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and wanted to talk in particular about something that we've begun across agencies and like to bring back as part of the what we hope this amendment will do going forward. I'm here to speak in favor of the amendment. Now, the Joyce Foundation in 2007 gave the state of Minnesota a planning grant to have the time to hone in on where our emphasis ought to be. The Joyce Foundation is interested in what they're calling transformative statewide changes. And they're working with a number of Midwestern states, and as I understand it, California has joined as well fairly recently on this shifting gears project. A consensus emerged that we need to reform our adult education and workforce development systems to serve low-wage, low-skilled workers so they can get the education and training that they need that will allow them to compete enough to pay for themselves and their family. In 2008, with the help of that implementation grant from the Joyce Foundation, we launched something called the Minnesota Fast Track Program. TRAC stands for Training, Resources, and Credentialing. Partners include our system, the Minnesota State Colleges and University System, the Department of Education's Adult Basic Education Division, the Department of Employment and Economic Development, the Department of Human Services, the Offices of Higher Education, and the Department of Labor and Industry. The goal in this project is to create a set of credentials in education and training that an individual can acquire that will lead to a career in occupations and industries with high unmet needs for those skills. The grant funded the continuation and expansion of 7 different incubators throughout the state, pilot projects that are identifying credentials and developing innovative ways to provide support services and new curriculum. So in all so far, the state has received $520,000 from the Joyce Foundation for this project. We're applying for an additional $500,000 in August to continue building and testing this model that we think will give us some direction on how the kind of integration that Senator Clark is talking about should occur. And then just one last point, since the notion of co-location came up, and we have used the St. Cloud Technical College and Workforce Development Center model in thinking about not just co-location, but the possibility of integration where the college can benefit by virtue of those resources available on its campus, and the opposite, where we can demystify for a lot of people who might not have considered post-secondary education what it means because these two organizations are working so closely together. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments of this witness? Senator Clark, do you have anybody else?
No, Mr. Chair, although we probably could find some more if you'd like it, but my guess is you have other things to be moving on to.
Does anybody else feel compelled to testify for or against this bill? Senator Clark, we believe this goes to the floor. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so Senator Bonhoff will move that Senate File 1569 as amended be recommended to pass. Any further discussion or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion adopted. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You. Thank you.
Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1808 I'd like to leave on the table at this point in time, but I would like to provide the committee with an update on this issue because it has certainly rolled the waters. I had a bill up earlier this week on charter schools, and that was what the Pioneer Press said I was doing in that area. And I want to address the issue that has been brought to many of us by the hospitality industry. And first of all, I want to thank the industry for recognizing that legislators are here to listen to you, to hear your concerns, to listen to the challenges that you're having. And I want to acknowledge how respectful you have been in talking with us about the climate, about the issues that you're going through, about what I would call is really a crisis in the industry. And while many of us are hearing about the impact of this recession on many of our businesses, I'm not sure that we were all as aware of how many of you are struggling. And I really want to acknowledge that. And I also want to acknowledge to my colleagues who have listened to them, I have appreciated that you have been listening and you've talked with me about this issue. So I do want to acknowledge that. This industry is obviously, as many others, you know, facing some challenges. It's only responsible for us to be able to find a way to really work with you. And given these concerns, I've really been trying to work on how can we acknowledge the problem? How can we work with you as we've worked with other sectors to try to find some way to be of assistance to you? We solve problems by bringing people together. And that's what I really want to really emphasize today, that we're going to set up a process where we're going to bring people together to work on this. And we can't work on a problem until we understand and acknowledge it. And so across the country, we are hearing how people are being open to doing things new ways. I know that we've heard repeatedly, you know, from President Obama that we have to lay aside our partisan differences and start doing what's best for our country, what is really best for the people, and to acknowledge this is a time when we're doing some things that we have to look at really differently. We are going to be making some cuts in the legislature that none of us ran for election to make, but we're going to have to be doing some very difficult things. We're hearing about businesses across the state in our own communities where employees are working with their employers to find solutions to keep their doors open. And I commend that in that we are one, that people see their businesses as larger families. So in that regard, I do want to acknowledge that Senator Metzen and I have been working together on how we can be responsive. And I want to let you know that both the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development, Commissioner McElroy, and also Commissioner Swigum with the Department of Labor and Industry want to work with us in convening, I don't know if it's a work group or a task force, but bringing together the industry representatives and also our employee groups to really come together and talk about what we can do to be able to address these challenges. Because if we don't at least acknowledge the problem and consider what we can do, I would feel very badly if we didn't take this opportunity to think about what we could do to save jobs. And that's what this is all about. When you look at what this committee has done, Mr. Chair, we have talked about a lot of different areas of where we can grow jobs, of where we can work on unemployment compensation to have some greater flexibility, to work on these issues. And because people have said, how can we keep people working? So I am disappointed when I have heard statements like, I don't know how we can resolve this, and I don't have faith in the other side. And that simply doesn't help solve a problem, that we absolutely have to be able to come and sit together. And that's what I hope that we can really do through this process. And I know that some of you at this table today, there was questions of whether we could have the votes to pass this bill out of this committee. And at certain times, we probably could. And I'm not going to try to do that today because I believe that the real issue is bringing people together. And I have faith that both sides will come with the best interests of the industry in mind, because if the industry isn't working, people aren't going to be working either. So with that, I'd be willing to take questions, Mr. Chair, or if people have other comments.
Thank you, Senator Saltzman. Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Saltzman, thank you for bringing the bill forward. I wish we were hearing it and talking about it. This committee is a very pro-jobs committee. And if you're pro-jobs, in my mind, you're pro-business. Business provides the jobs for people. And I just can't believe that people would rather fall on a sword of principle rather than keep a job and keep a business going. And so I'm very disappointed that whatever forces there are that discouraged you from, having the bill heard. And I'm just really disappointed in that, because I think it was really reasonable and generous. And we should be voting for it, I think. I mean, it's not exactly an easy, fun vote for me, but I would be supporting it if you had it in front of us.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, I appreciate the courage with which you have brought forward both the bill and your remarks today. And some of the restaurant industry people who are here live in my district, and I have gotten to know them and appreciate the commitment that they've brought forward to work with us in the legislature. And I know that that we have been in this body more open to having this discussion than perhaps the other body or perhaps at any other time. And I think that that does bode well for the future, and that I, too, am committed to a solution. And I would like to work with this group and with you and with those on the other side and to sit down and see what we can accomplish. And perhaps we will defy all logic and actually, you know, without a legislative process, come forward with a solution.
Mr. Chair, thank you for those comments. I don't want this to be perceived that we have given up on this issue. I want to make that very clear to, you know, people who support this and to the people in this room that one of the issues that has been brought is that this issue sort of came up really quickly. And as I've shared with people, as, you know, there were comments made that there was an agreement that, the minimum wage issue and tip credits or tip penalties, however you want to call it, would not be brought up this issue, and that that was the agreement a year ago. Well, as I've shared with people, where we were a year ago and where we are today are very different places. That the economy, I don't think any of us ever thought that as a legislature we would be facing a $7 billion deficit. I don't think we ever anticipated what would happen to our economy, what would be going on in small business a year ago. And if we stick with the status quo all the time and don't look at again, how do we help people get through maybe the next 2 years when we hope that some of the programs that we're implementing, we're working really hard in the legislature, we're making investments to put people back to work. You know, I think that some of the things that we did last session with our transportation bill, which was controversial, but we are going to be putting people back to work on major projects. And when people are working, they're also going out and they're generating taxes and they're spending money. So that's very important. But I think it should be noted that I hope that through this process we continue this discussion. I know that there are deadlines, but I, you know, want to be clear that I am very committed to continuing to work on this issue so that maybe we can find some compromises. There were a lot of issues of possible amendments to this bill yesterday, and I would like to perhaps think that whatever this bill might have looked like, if it was amended or tweaked a little bit, might be a recommendation that comes from a group as they realize the issue. I know that Ms. Batsley is here, and Ms. Batsley, would you be willing to talk about, you know, Commissioner McElroy, if his willingness to work with us on this issue?
Thank you, Mr. Welcome, Chair. Senator Saltzman, my name is Lynn Batsley. I'm the legislative liaison for DEED. And I want to just say that our commissioner definitely agrees that you solve problems by bringing people together and was very pleased to be included in this working group and looks forward to accomplishing your goals.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's another thing, Mr. Chair. You know, Mr. Chair, I just wondered if and I know this is sort of a unique way to kind of talk about a bill, but I'm just wondering if maybe there's just a couple people from the industry and a couple people from the employee groups who might just be willing to share, come to the table, and express if they're willing to participate in this process. That would be something that would perhaps advance this issue. And again, this is about protecting the industry, and when we're protecting the industry, as Senator Scheid pointed out, when we're pro-jobs, we are pro-business. And maybe if people would be willing to come to the table and share that, I would appreciate it.
Somebody, would anybody like to come to the table?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saltzman, thank you. I'll be very, very brief. I'm Dave Siegel with the Minnesota Restaurant Association. I want to thank you so very much for the opportunity to raise this issue. It's a vital concern to, obviously, our industry, to the employees in our industry, all 265,000 of them, to the 9,000 restaurants in the state of Minnesota, and I think to the state overall. So we want to just express our tremendous appreciation for the opportunity to work on this issue. We very much look forward to working with all sides and all parties to reach some sort of a conclusion that can be beneficial to both the owners of these businesses and operators of these businesses and, of course, their employees. So again, just we're happy and eager for the opportunity to work together. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Siegel.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Scott Weiner. I'm the chairman of the Legislative Committee for Hospitality Minnesota, which governs Restaurant Association, Hotel Association, Resorts and Campgrounds. continuing our discussion from Monday. Number one, I've really gotten to know many members of this panel, and it's been a great opportunity, and we really appreciate our opportunity to be heard because this is such an important issue. That's why we're here. I would like to point out that last week our president stood next to a restaurant operator in front of the mass media and said, "We need to help small businesses. They're struggling, and there's no way out." This is something in Minnesota that is dually hard as an employer, as there is no wage relief, as there are in almost every state in our country, for restaurant hotel operators. This economy is killing us. The jobs are dropping by the wayside very quickly. We're here not just for our own survival, but the people that work within our industry are like our family. Many of them are here. They're not restaurant owners. They're all of us, owners, cooks, servers. We all are here for the same reason. We have extended our hand out to the opposition. We are truly trying to find a way to find resolution to this very, very unique problem. 9,300 jobs, according to Deed, were lost in our industry last year, and it's projected to go higher this year. We're 15% of the state tax revenue. We're 10% of the jobs in our state. And we're going to be losing many of them, many, many. We're already losing them, and it's about to happen at a much greater rate when this bill if this bill is not passed or a resolution isn't found. It's going to happen a lot faster. We already know that you are aware that most industries are either taking pay cuts or having pay freezes, and we're being forced to have 50 to 70% of our staff take a pay increase at a time when it is absolutely impossible for us to do this. The delinquencies on commercial real estate taxes is skyrocketing because people cannot afford to pay them. This is a real, real issue that we need real, real resolution on. We really appreciate the opportunity to have this moment so that we can find a resolution and keep as many people in our state working as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Weiner.
Senator, my name is Steve Watson. I am the past president of the Minnesota Restaurant Association. I also represent the state on the National Restaurant Association Board of Directors, and I would agree with what Mr. Siegel said, what Mr. Weiner said. We definitely would look forward to the opportunity of meeting and talking. There's an old adage that communication is the key to success. With communication, all things are possible. With no communication, you're dead in the water. So we would look forward to any opportunities to get together, talk, and see where we can take this. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Salzman, members of the committee, I want to just thank everybody. My name is Dan O'Gara from O'Gara's Bar in St. Paul. I am currently president of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. And I just want to touch on the fact that all we're asking for right now is to come to the table with the labor folks and try to work out a compromise. Our businesses are hurting all over the state. Some of the smaller restaurants, larger restaurants, nobody is dodging the bullet right now. And I think that if we can get to the table, it says a lot to have the two trade associations, the industry leaders in the state working together on this issue, it says a lot about where our industry is right now. And I thank everybody here for the courage to bring this forward, and hopefully we can come to the table and work something out to make everybody's job here easy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Miguel, and I'm the executive chef for Pittsburgh Blue and Maple Grove. I've been about 20 years in the restaurant industry, and 20 years ago, I started cleaning tables and washing dishes. My responsibilities as an executive chef is oversee the quality of the food, all the back of the house, hiring, training, evaluating, and scheduling. Numbers, I have about 20 employees that report to me, and therefore it's about 20 families that are depending on the income that Pixel Blue provide for them. And I want to say that the sales at the restaurants – over the last years are 15% down. The costs that I have seen increase on food, energy, and labor during the past 2 years and during the first part of this year are substantially increased a lot. In the past year, I have to reduce almost 30% the employees that I have due to the tough economic times. Those costs with the declining sales are creating a tough economic times, and they are something that we haven't seen in the past. My kitchen, which is the heart of the house, of the restaurant, have to work together with the front of the house in order for any restaurant to succeed. We know for a fact that at least Pittsburgh Blue, our servers, in the last year, over the last year, they were making over $23 an hour. That's substantially way more than what any of the cooks make per hour. The 70 cents per hour that the compensated service staff, if this were going to pass, was going to get, will eliminate the possibility of any wage increase for my staff and will create a greater disparity among the front and back of the house. This wage increase is a threat to our survival and will lead me to make further cuts in my kitchen. All the wages for all of us have been frozen. We have been to make cuts every month, basically. The people who will be most affected by another minimum wage increase for service will be my kitchen staff, and therefore their families will suffer by losing wages or position. We simply cannot raise menu prices to compensate for our increased costs, and many restaurants will simply go out of business. This is not a time to think the restaurants can afford this wage increase. We need your assistance during this tough economic time for a sense of fairness among all employees. We want to keep every person employed so all can maintain a good quality of life. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else that, is there anybody from representing labor that wants to say anything?
Chair, committee, my name is Wade Luneberg, political director for Unite Here, Minnesota, and also the secretary-treasurer of Local 17. The Union of Needle and Textile Industrial Textile Employees and the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union. And actually, in this committee, we'd actually look forward to a piece of legislation that would create jobs around Made in America uniform procurement that Senator Tomasoni is sponsoring. We also recognize the challenges in the industry. Personally, I sit on two Taft-Hartley funds, a pension fund and a health care fund that our course employer and employee managed. We see changes in the benefit structures that are going to be necessary in the future. We see employer contributions, adjustments having to be made in the contributions to those trust funds. We are looking at a huge contraction in our industry. Reduced hours, layoffs, people really shifting to get that shift that might actually make the difference, to actually put another meal on the table for their kids or to catch up on a utility bill. That 70 cents in the increase in the minimum wage that was legislated by the previous Congress is an important piece of that. We do look forward to working with the industry in the next coming weeks. To see if there is a solution out there. I did meet with them earlier this week, and we did commit at that point as a minimum wage coalition to have further discussion. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Mr. Luderberg.
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, I'm Chris Jacobs, executive director of the Jobs Now Coalition. I have my testimony here and our membership. I'm here to give an unvoiced I'm here to communicate some information and let you know where we're coming from, because I feel like I'm not feeling the love here today for our side. If you've never waited tables, I can tell you it's harder than it looks. In fact, it's an art, and a lot of servers work just as hard as their employers did to get where they are. Here are a few things to consider about serving food to the public. Imagine being judged minute by minute on your work and then paid accordingly, even if the circumstances about which you are judged are not entirely or even remotely in your control. A waiter or waitress is not responsible for mistakes the kitchen makes, yet if the food is bad, the server will be the loser because the tips will suffer. When the restaurant is busy, it takes longer to get the food. There's nothing a server can do about this, but the judgment is made nonetheless. And it is the server who will take the brunt of the customer's frustration. Thus, the goal, the aim of working in the first place, to be rewarded for your contribution to the enterprise by exchanging value for value, is thwarted. Waitstaff does a lot of janitorial work besides seeing to it that the dining room is always presentable so that people will want to come back. The place is dirty, it affects the rate of return patronage, and diminishes the value of the exchange all around. The threat of sickness is never far away, because patrons cough all over you, frankly, and leave dirty tissue for you to clean up. Despite this constant threat, paid sick days are rare and benefits are hard to come by unless you are in a union establishment. Given all this, we think it's absurd to suggest that waiting tables is a low-skill occupation unworthy of compensation. That is why the 120 organizations of the Jobs Now Coalition oppose this bill and ask you to do the same. Mr. Chair, I'd just like to let you know that I have been part of a group that met many, many times in Commissioner Stigham's office, and we will continue to be about the business of talking about our position and trying to communicate our concerns.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jill Gagan. I am a server. I work for HMS Host at the airport. I am a professional server. I have been in this profession since I was 15 years old. I started out as a dishwasher, and one night in the middle of a fish fry, two waitresses threw their uniforms at the manager and said, "Forget it, I'm out of here," and I suddenly was born a server. I love what I do. It was an accidental career, and I love what I do. But being that I started out in the heart of the house, I have a very deep compassion and a very deep understanding that I do not get what I need by myself. My main concern, my sole concern today, is that we not go backwards. I've been at the separate rate of pay. I've been at the lower end. It's not fair to separate us out and say we're not worthy. You've acknowledged us. You've respected us. Please hold that. Keep that in mind. We're open too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Senator Saltzman, I don't know if you want to make any final comments. I think the consensus of this committee is that we're happy to see that everybody wants to get together and try and work this out. And Brad, did you want to say something? Okay. All right. Sorry.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I don't think that Senator Saltzman bill disrespects or in any way, shape, or form disrespects the work that's done by servers, because I think that maybe we're wrong, but we think that people get tips. I certainly tip in a restaurant, and I've, you know, maybe some people do blame the servers for, you know, something that's bad, but I've not ever had that experience. I just want to say this, I don't think this is about the increase and thinking that people don't merit the increase. I think all of us deserve a raise, okay? Everybody. But it's not happening today. And we were trying to save businesses so that we can save jobs. It isn't about those I don't know what the rate is going up. Is it 70 cents, I think I heard? I'd rather not have that raise if it meant keeping my job. So to me, that's the choice that people are making here.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, I also wanted to express my appreciation for the job of a waiter or waitress or server, because it is simply that we are even considering this bill is not in any way related to a lack of appreciation or respect, because it is a very tough job, actually. I tried it once in college, and the owners of the restaurant let me know I wasn't very good at it, and so I didn't get to keep that job. But I do have a great deal of respect for the work of the people who testified. Thank you.
Mr. Leto.
Mr. Chair, Senators, we have Brad Leto, I'm sorry, Chief of Staff for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and actually worked, just so you know, I've fairly long history with this. Is I was with committee staff in 1984 when this was repealed, and phased out over 5 years. So I've been in numerous discussions over the year, and in fact, if I am in any way the problem, I would be happy to step back from any further discussions on it. But the thing that I like to say is we have been in numerous discussions. I know our legislative director, who is actually ill today, was in discussions in Commissioner Swigum's office over the course of the summer last year, and as long with a number of the other partners. We do belong to a group of probably, and I don't have the list in front of me, but 10, 12 labor, faith, and nonprofit organizations that work on this. So we take a lot of guidance from the servers, organizations, Jobs Now, and other folks on this, because quite honestly, most of the people we represent are making above minimum wage. That doesn't mean that we have long been, and the national AFL-CIO has long been a supporter of the minimum wage. Having said that, we would be happy to participate in further discussions along with the rest of this the employee organizations as well as the other organizations of the coalition. I do want to, though, say that if we're in the discussions, everything's on the table. Currently, Minnesota's minimum wage right now is in the bottom 10 of the nation, and I don't have the chart in front of me, but there are at least 8 or 9 states that do not have a minimum wage below us, of course. And so of those that do, we're still in the bottom 10, and I'm not exactly sure of the number, and I'm sure somebody might have a chart, but I don't. So we would like to look at everything on the table, as well as the issue of tips. So we're happy to do that. I just want to acknowledge, and I don't want to, you know, snow anybody here that everything is, we're going to look at the minimum wage level and if it should be increased or indexed as well. So thank you.
Mr. Rakowski.
Mr. Chairman, I'm John Rakowski with the Department of Labor and Industry, and I'm here today because Mr. Swigum isn't in town today, and he asked me to also tell you that he has the complete support of bringing this group back together. This group came together in the summer of 07, actually, and met for many, many months, right up until last spring when the minimum wage bill was vetoed by the governor, just so that everybody remembers that last spring, because there wasn't a tip credit. He's committed to bringing the group back together, start over, widen the group, whatever it takes, and we'll begin that process next week.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this kind of goes to some of the comments on both sides of the issue here today. You know, there's, in regards to labor not feeling the love in the room, I can tell labor that there's plenty of people in this room and around this table that have been longtime supporters of the labor movement, and as a matter of fact, there's at least 3 people on this committee that still have union cards. You know, with that said, this is a very difficult issue. The issue of the tip credit has been around since I've been in the legislature. I'm sure it's going to be around long after I'm gone. But as someone who does have a labor card in their pocket, I understand the difficult circumstances that many of the business owners are here today testifying on. And I also understand why Senator Saltzman has tried to bring this issue forward. She wants to save all jobs. As many of us in labor do too. We want to save all jobs. And I believe that we've always felt that way. We've always felt that we were partners with our employers. Because we know that without the employer, we don't have a job. And if they're successful, we're going to be successful. I know that our local and our union has always believed in that, and I believe that the AFL-CIO has always held that as being one of their strongest convictions. And servers work extremely hard. I mean, all of us go out to eat, and it doesn't matter if you're at DiGidio's or, you know, Mancini's or wherever around here. Servers work really hard, and I do believe that
the O'Gara's do it.
O'Gara's, okay, I got to get that one in there too. So, yeah, Mets gonna be down after the meeting. So.
No advertising, guys.
Okay, I'm sorry, but I do believe that the business owners appreciate the work that is done on their behalf. I really feel that we're in uncharted waters. And as a union person, I just know that you don't have a job without the business being profitable. I would hope that if you put this committee back together, that we get some result before the end of the session, because this issue needs to be addressed. You know, I've watched labor things happen and business activity all across the United States. We've seen hundreds of thousands of businesses close. And that means that, you know, folks like the ones in the room here, these folks back here, have to go and get file for unemployment or whatever. And that just drives up the cost to your committee, Senator Tomasoni. And it doesn't do anything for those families who end up struggling. Everybody would rather have a job. I think it's incumbent that we settle this issue, even if it's only with this two-year moratorium or whatever it may be. That may be the way to get past this funk that we're in right now. But the bottom line is that everybody needs to come to the table and give a little bit. Otherwise, everybody gets nothing. And that's what's at stake here. So I really, Senator Saltzman, I really appreciate the work that you've done, and I hope that labor and business can get together with Commissioner Swigum and get something done.
I think everybody's agreed that they're going to do that. But let's not forget that this issue is not the only issue that has been causing the problem. This legislature has passed no smoking laws, .08, DWI laws, dram shop laws. They've all complicated this industry. And quite frankly, I know we're not going to be repealing any of those laws, but the fact of the matter is that there's a whole bunch of things that have happened right in this building that have caused this industry to have a real lot of problems other than minimum wage. So I don't think we need to go any further on this unless Senator Saltzman wants to make one final wrap-up point. But
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate all the comments, and I appreciate the willingness of people to express interest in this. And that, you know, I don't want this group coming together to only see this as an effort to address just minimum wage or just the tip credit. That the point was to look at the industry in a broader way as well. So I want to make that very clear that it is between, you know, the workers and the industry. And that the other issue that I think that's been brought up through this is that in every other situation, I think in the state pretty much, as employers and employees are sitting down to talk about how they work together to get through this, employees have a little bit of a choice in what they're willing to give up. And one of the issues that has been brought to me by servers, and I don't think they're not coming with their arm, you know, because someone's twisting their arm. They're coming because they're worried about losing their job and the impact of this.
is that I don't have a choice. The people at my restaurant or in my, you know, particular business, we don't have a choice. I mean, this is a mandated pay increase. And for those, and is that a possibility to leave the door open? So I really appreciate that that we've had this conversation. I really appreciate Senator Metzen and the council that we've had very good meetings and really trying to look at this as representing this, you know, as Senator Murphy said, there is a lot of love in the room today. There's a lot of love of keeping people working, of keeping families whole. That's my intent in carrying this legislation. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Monday is the next meeting at maybe not. Okay. Meeting adjourned.
Oh, that was pretty good. That was a bad idea.